Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Budweiser beer's the one that's leading the rest.
When you say Bud.
And Beechwood aging makes it beer at its best.
When you say Bud.
One taste will tell you.
Hey, it's Dave Player here on 720 WGN. Today is Beer Can Appreciation Day, and just over 80 years ago, canned beer made its debut on this day in 1935. In partnership with the American Can Company, the Gottfried Kruger Brewing Company delivered 2,000 cans of Kruger's Finest Beer and Kruger's Cream Ale. But it wasn't until 1909 that the American Can Company made its first attempt to can beer nationally. It wasn't so successful, but in 1935, canned beer finally made its national debut. And to talk about the history of beer in America and beer can collectibles is Dave Gosipol from the Beer Can Collectors of America. Very cool to have you join us tonight, Dave.
Hey, glad to do it.
So, first of all, when did beer actually made its way to America in general?
Well, I mean, if you go all the way back to the General Bradford's doctor, his dialogue that he kept on the Mayflower, he actually talks about how they had to go into land around Plymouth Rock because their provisions were low, especially their beer. So that literally the Pilgrims were the first to document it, that, you know, we needed to get inland so we could get our crops planted so we could brew more beer.
Yeah, I know around in the 1600s, there was also a New World Brewery that opened up in New Amsterdam, which is now Manhattan in New York. And I was looking at this, by 1810, there was 132 breweries that were operating. And by 1873, we had almost 4,000 of them. So you can see how quickly everything grew. And, of course, then came Prohibition. But it was all bottles, pretty much, that beer was sold in until really about 1935.
That's correct. Obviously, Prohibition hampered a lot of those developments, but once Prohibition ended, American Can and some of the other companies, they went to work right away on figuring out the best way to do it in cans.
What was the appeal to putting it in cans rather than bottles? Cost?
Well, it was lighter to ship, so you could get more on a truck, so costs were lower that way. And then the other thing is it protected from light. Light is very damaging to beer.
Okay, so that kind of kept it a little fresher longer, especially at a time where they were trying to figure out how to do that with food and drinks in general. So I get that. And I know they were very popular also during World War II, I mean, which was right after that, because they were able to ship millions of cans a little more cost-effectively overseas.
Correct, and they actually produced them in a very dull, sort of an olive drab design, because just like they used to, you know, not put chrome bumpers on cars and stuff during the war, they didn't want the reflection to possibly put the soldiers at risk.
Oh, interesting. Okay, that makes sense to me. And I know retro beers have made this comeback over the last few years, especially some of the vintage designs of the 60s and 70s. And today, canned beer accounts for approximately half of the $20 billion industry. So I was trying to think, you know, if it was more popular. I'm a little bit more of a bottle guy, I guess, except when I'm in the ballpark, then I'll definitely take a can. But it's still half of U.S. sales still today.
Yeah, and with the craft brewing movement, a lot of them have even foregone the idea of bottles and gone right into cans, because with things like portable canning companies, mobile mm-hmm. canning companies, and you know, it's a much cheaper entity to go into the canning side for these craft breweries, thanks to Ball Corporation and some other can companies that have made it a cheaper entity. And it's a much better package. It protects it from light, ships lighter, it recycles cheaper. Bottles are much more expensive to recycle.
Well, and there were different types of cans as well. I mean, there was the flat top can, which I think we all kind of know. There was the cone top style. Was that a screw top? I don't remember those.
It opened like a bottle. The cone top cans came out and went away in the 50s. But basically, the breweries that couldn't afford a canning line could actually just retool their bottling line slightly to accept these cone top cans, because they filled and capped just like a bottle.
And then there was the pull tab of the tab top style, which I remember growing up. I know they weren't great for the environment because you'd find the tabs everywhere. I remember. And then, of course, there's the stay tab style, which we know today. Now, you know, with the Beer Can Collectors of America, what are some of the highly collectible cans? Is it the style or is it the brand that's more collectible?
In some instances, it is the style, but mostly it's the ones that, you know, were quick, short releases to the market, you know, where there's just a few known examples. Or, you know, it's just a gorgeous can. You know, I mean, there's some of them that have been out there. They're just highly collectible for that reason.
Well, we were talking about that Kruger company that was really the first to can beer. I got to assume that those are pretty highly collectible since that was the first.
Absolutely. You know, just who wouldn't want the, you know, the first can in their collection for that reason. So those do remain highly collectible. And interesting, they introduced the cans in Richmond, Virginia, even though the brewery was from Newark, New Jersey, because if the experiment failed, they didn't want it to hurt their home market. So they went to their furthest away wholesaler to introduce canned beer, which was all the way down in Richmond, Virginia, because they didn't want to hurt their local market.
Wow. Now, you know, I remember growing up in the 60s and 70s, and I mean, man, there was, I don't want to say it's a lost art because I still see them, and I still have friends that have their beer can collections that they started even in college. But in the 60s and 70s in Chicago basements, I mean, that was part of the bar experience. You know, every basement had a bar, and every basement had a beer can collection.
Yeah, and I was one that started in 1974 and still to this day do it. I never stopped, but we're seeing a resurgence of a lot of people that collected in the 60s and 70s that are coming back now that their kids are grown and they're looking for a hobby.
It's cool. I say this because when you see them displayed on the wall and you look at the artwork on some of these cans, it's kind of a lost art to have that kind of on display. There's a lot of great classic logos and designs that were really cool.
It's a great way to sort of look back into Americana, too. I mean, the history of some of these brands of, you know, cities that had breweries that don't anymore. And now, of course, with the craft brewery movement, there aren't too many cities that don't have a brewery anymore.
Yeah. No, they're all over Chicagoland. And I know it started here in about 1833 in Chicago when German immigrants established the first brewery here. It was named the Lille and Diversi Brewery. They made, like, English-style ales and porters. And then in 1847... John Huck opened the first German-style or lager beer plant with an adjacent beer garden, so you can actually, while they were brewing it, they were serving fresh beer pretty much outside on the north side. And we had all the vintage beers that we grew up in Chicago, and those are some of the cans that I remember growing up. And a lot of those designs of those cans from the 60s and 70s, and some are more of the Schlitz and the Hams and the old style, the old Milwaukee, the Blatz, they still look pretty retro. They still look the same.
Yeah, they really do. It's a, you know, it's sort of a throwback from that standpoint. But Bruce had to be very careful because every time they would change a design of a can or a bottle or something, immediately the public would think, they screwed with the beer. The recipe's not
right.
The same.
Right,
but
exactly.
They were always careful not to do that.
Well, I was looking at some of our texts that are coming in here. 606 says back in the day they had returnable bottles back in the day. 606, those short, fat bottles you spoke of were called glass cans by the Stroh's Brewing Company. Another one was my first legal beer was Coors, and it was served to me poolside at the Stardust Hotel in Vegas. That's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, right? first beer was Olympia Gold. So a lot of people remember all these classic beers, and I'll tell you, one of the ones that are one of the oldest companies that really is now like the cool style retro beer that everybody drinks, including these college kids, is PBR. It was back in like 1882 when they started bottling this beer, the Blue Ribbon beer.
Yeah, and it got its name from the blue ribbons that they would put on the neck of the bottle. And it's really kind of, I mean, it was actually a cloth ribbon originally when it first started out, and that was how it got its real start when Captain Pabst started putting that on there. Was his way of getting people to try the beer. He hadn't even won anything at the time, but he was going to let them know that it was a good beer, and so he put the blue ribbon on.
Schlitz was the next brewed in the USA since 1849. It was, you know, people, you know, and they have nicknames for Schlitz, obviously, but it was back in the 60s. This was a premium beer. This wasn't a low-level beer. There was some advertising faux pas that they made in the 70s that really changed the perception of this beer, but that was a premium beer back then.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the slogan, the beer that made Milwaukee famous, was because during the Chicago fire, Schlitz was the first beer to come down into Chicago to serve the thirsty people that had lost all their breweries in the fire. And that's how it became the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
Chicago's known for old-style beer, first brewed in 1902 by the G. Heilemann Brewing Company in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and still served, by the way, today at Wrigley Field. They used to sell it in the stands a couple years ago when they changed the licensing contracts. It ended up just being in a couple locations at Wrigley, but you could still have an old-style there. There was Hams, the Theodore Ham Brewing Company from 1865 that our news guy Roger Badish was talking about. Let's take a quick listen to a classic Hams commercial.
From the land of sky blue waters,
waters.
From the land of pines, lofty blossoms, from the beer refreshing.
Pour an ice-cold Hams and treat yourself to the premium beer from the land of sky blue waters. Great tasting Hams.
Classic. I love those commercials. Absolutely classic. And in fact, you know, I'm watching all, and just I remember all the jingles even as a kid, you know, for some of these beer brands. Old Milwaukee, Schaefer's, there was Stroh's, of course, that started in the 18th century in 1848. A lot of these are owned by Pabst now. So they bought up, I think it was the Metropolis Brothers that and that brought all these classic beer brands from across America and a lot of these regional beer brands to Pabst. Now, Pabst makes mostly all of these that we remember as a kid.
That's correct. Pabst sort of started collecting the brands over the years when they purchased Heilemann and they bought the Stroh's brewery. They bought, you know, and ended up with the Schlitz brands and Schaefer and so many of them. And so a lot of those brands are still around because Pabst sort of saw the light and collected them all, knowing that, you know, to put them back on a regional basis may be a good move, and it's proving very successful for brands like Rainier and Lone Star and some of them as they reintroduce them as the local offering.
Tell me a little bit about your club.
The Brewery Collectibles Club of America started in 1970 as the Beer Can Collectors of America. We grew to over 20,000 members, but we've since leveled off at about 4,000 members and still very active. I mean, pretty much every region around the country has at least once a month there is some type of a gathering of the collectors, be it at a VFW hall and Knights of Columbus, even along those lines, and still very active. And with all the craft cans, that's really been a nice sock in the arm as far as excitement goes for getting people to really collect the cans again. But we don't just collect the cans. It's everything. It's bottles, it's coasters, it's openers,
advertising,
signs.
Yeah.
Any advertising, correct.
Well, and you do these events throughout the country all year long. You have one coming up in Wakanda at the American Legion Hall on Super Bowl Sunday early so that you can still get to the game, and then another one March 6th at the VFW in Park Ridge, and we'll look out for that as well. And for more on the Brewery Collectors Club of America, visit BCCA. That's B as in boy, BCCA.com. Thanks, Dave, for sharing a little bit with us this morning. Appreciate it.